Okay, I guess the shiur, at this point we can call it the aftermath of Korach. And we'll go through some of the events that took place before, just so that we have a reference and a context. So, we all know Korach led a revolt against Moshe Rabbeinu. So we know that the real reason, his real desire was to get the kahuna. He was very upset that Aaron, Moshe's brother, got all the kavod, you know, when he was passed over. So he led a revolt against Moshe because his kavod was lacking. Well, any good revolt needs an ideology. So he had to come up with an ideology. Now, I'm not really interested in going into in-depth Korach as an individual, but certain things we just have to, basic ideas we have to know. So, I mean, the Ramban eloquently talks about how Korach was planning this for a long time. He was looking to usurp Moshe for a while, except Moshe was untouchable. Korach was Moshe led Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim before the Nisim. They had the events of the Yom Suf. The Mitzrayim were killed, and Moshe was just this tremendous leader who was going to lead them into Eretz Yisrael. He's going to bring them home. And they have the events of Har Sinai, and everything's wonderful. Korach's not happy about it. He wants. He feels he's unhappy about his position, but he really gets upset when he finds out he's not even getting the kahuna. But it's still, Moshe's untouchable. But then an event takes place, the Meraglim. And because of the sin of the Meraglim, Klal Yisrael no longer was going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael, but they were destined to that generation die out in the Midbar, and then go, and then after that generation dies out, they can go into Eretz Yisrael. Well, Moshe lost his luster. Korach now had an opportunity to attack. So he led a revolt. But a revolt needs an ideology. What was his ideology? We'll call it, he tried to philosophize the halachic system. He says each man can look at halacha and come up with his own way of determining what it's supposed to mean for him. And this was, brought down by Chazal in wonderful stories. If a piece of clothing is all blue, does it need tzitzis? If you have a room that's just filled with Sifrei Torah, does it need a mezuzah? Either way of destroying the halachic system as we know it. And this was very popular. Anybody who was near Korach jumped right onto the bandwagon. It was a very popular movement. So I think maybe at the end of the year we'll see what was so popular about it, and we can describe it a little bit further. And I just have one question on the whole Korach event that, again, maybe at the end we can we'll be a little cleared up. What was Moshe's answer to this? At the end of the day, he tried to talk them out of it. He worked very hard. I mean, he spent the whole night campaigning against this. But he said, "Look, I'll tell you what, Aaron and his the real Kohanim will bring the Machtos, will bring the Ketores." And your group can bring the Ketores. And we'll see what happens. And then he tells Klal Yisrael, everybody, he says, and if Korach dies a natural death, you know that I'm a fraud. But if he dies an unnatural death, then you know I'm real. How come no one got scared? Moshe Rabbeinu just performed all the Nisim. He just gave the Torah. Everybody accepted that it was true. Moshe Emes, the Sarasu Emes, was unquestioned at this point. Maybe Korach had an opportunity to lead and become a new leader, but that Moshe was true was unquestioned. They all knew, 250 people knew, if they bring the Ketores improperly, they're going to die. Korach, you could say, was a maniac. You know, he just thought somehow he got completely caught up in his own world, and he somehow thought that he was going to best Moshe. But what about his followers? Didn't they know they were going to die? So that's a question that bothered me for years. It wasn't the question that led to this, but I think maybe perhaps we'll be able to answer it at the end. Okay. So, go ahead.
Just in terms of their their belief in Moshe Rabbeinu. It seemed, I mean, Korach was questioning it to some extent in terms of his interpretation.
Absolutely. So something switched. What switched? In a very short period of time, they went from Moshe MS and Sarasu MS right. to Korach asking a couple of questions about tzitzis and Torah and mezuzah.
Right.
And so that's it.
Right. Not just,
no, so my question is, I mean, why wouldn't he say the same thing about the Torah? Maybe he's wrong about that.
I know, but would you be so confident that he's wrong about that after what you just saw? I mean, human nature. Let's get out of the story as looking back historically. If a person witnessed all these miracles, everything that Moshe predicted in Mitzrayim came true. He drowned the Mitzrayim. These guys were in slavery for hundreds of years, and the captives were, the Mitzrayim all drowned in the Yam Suf. Then he takes them to Har Sinai, and whatever event took place there, they all walked away believing Moshe Emes Yisrael. So clear. God spoke to Moshe, and he gave him the Torah, and that's it. I don't know, 7 weeks later, a few weeks later, I'm going to Ramban, it was later that summer, pretty much, mm-hmm. or half a year later. It was half a year later by Pesach. A half a year later, they couldn't go straight into Eretz Yisrael because of the Meraglim. And all of a sudden, that's it. He's not so powerful. I'll take my chances. I don't think anybody here would take those chances.
So why is your question limited to Torah and not simply to antagonizing Moshe Rabbeinu?
Because he didn't set them up. I mean, you can attack it. We're going to come to that. We're going to come to what some events that took place. Maybe that you'll see that question, they really did antagonize Moshe. But at least Moshe, by the Torah, set it up. If you do this, bring it. We'll see who's right. We'll test it. He tested them. This Chumash is like not the same Chumash I have at home. Okay. All right. Okay, so let's hold off on that. So what happened? So exactly what Moshe said was going to happen. The earth opened up and Korach and his family fell into the middle of the desert. Exactly what he said. He said an unnatural event's going to take place. It took place. Korach's dead. The 250 people didn't die yet. What does it say, the Pasuk says? The Pasuk says, V'chol Yisrael Asher, Pasuk, Perik, Tesayin, Pasuk Lamadal. V'chol Yisrael Asher, Sivo Sehem, Nasu Lekolam, Kiyomu, Pendu, V'lanu Haaretz. All the Kla Yisrael that was nearby got scared. Maybe they're going to die too. Now, it's interesting, this isn't the Eda. Every time it refers to Korach and his followers, it says Korach and his Eda. This is just Yisrael Asher, Sivo Sehem. This is just the people that are nearby. What were they worried about? Well, what do they get scared about? Korach died and that's it. Four people, his family, whatever it is. There's 250 people didn't even die yet. What were they petrified about? Korach tried to lead a revolt. He's dead. That's it. What were they petrified about? Why are they dying? And then, V'esh Yatzah Me'es Hashem. Then the fire came out from God, so to speak, and the 250 people died. What happened? All right, maybe afterwards they'd be scared. Now a lot of people are dead. I don't know what they'd be so scared about then either, but certainly not beforehand. Okay, and then the next several Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, straight through Hay, talks about, all right, now we have these machtos, we have these firing pans that burnt incense. And every time I practice that, it came out the same way. So these machtos, the ketores, we'll just call them ketores, won't make that mistake. So the ketores, so these machtos, these firing pans, were kodesh. I mean, I'm a little concerned. I wonder why they're kodesh. I mean, but yeah. Okay. Again, maybe we'll open a door to it. Again, it's not the essence of the share, but maybe a door will be open. I don't even know that we'll have the answer. But I think maybe a door opens. Then the strangest thing happens. This is where the story should have ended. Right now. It's over. Go back to any event in Klal Yisrael when they sinned. They sinned. They got punished. People die. They travel. That's exactly what happens. I mean, it's every single time. This year, I was reading the parsha, waiting for it to end. What's happening here? It just doesn't, the story goes on. And the story goes on, and it takes the strangest turn. What's the next pasuk? Think about what happened. They take, Korach dies. Klal Yisrael, for some reason, the people that are nearby witnesses get petrified. They're going to all of a sudden die. We don't know why. For some reason, these machdos or kodesh, they have to be put into, incorporated into the mikdash, into the mishkan, into the mizbeach. What's Klal Yisrael's reaction to all these events? Klal Yisrael decided to go up to Moshe and Aaron and say, and complain against them. What are you doing? You're killing the nation of God. Now, I want you to know, it's Machlokes Rishonim, what does it mean, Am Hashem? Some say it means Levium, and some say it means all Klal Yisrael. Either way, I'm not interested. Either way. Why? Well, Moshe and Aaron are killing Am Hashem? There was a revolt. Korach died. There's a halacha that you can't bring, you can't do a vote in the wrong way. If you do, you'll be killed. They did. They die. What is everybody upset about? And then they're nervous that they're going to die. So what do? They go attack Moshe Rabbeinu. And they Moshe and Aaron, they complain against them. And you're killing. And their complaint is you're killing the nation of God. What type? First of all, I'd be petrified. What would I do? That's what I thought. What would I do? I would run back to my tent. I get on my hands and knees. I would do all kinds of things and just run away. The last thing I would do is lead another revolt. Yeah. I mean, they saw that it didn't work out too well.
Yeah.
Again, and the context is that just before this, Moshe Emes V'Soroso Emes. I mean, he was untouchable. When they were moved by taiva, when they were moved by fear, when they were moved by something, they complained. Fine. So to speak, God didn't like it. They get punished. They move on. It's exactly what happened here. This was moved by ego, by an ideology. It had to be destroyed. And Klal Yisrael's response is, you're killing us. It just makes no sense. Okay, so then the response gets stranger. Pasuk Tes. God says to Moshe, remove yourself from this congregation. I'm going to destroy them in a second. And Moshe and Aaron just fall down. They start to, that's it. They go to Yiplo Blam, which means Tefillah. We're not sure what Klal Yisrael did, why they did it, what their motivation was. But why is God not going to kill them? Obviously, they were scared of something. Why is the response that the Magepa has to happen right away? And it happened right away. It was happening. What happened? The Magepa started. And then what happens after that? Moshe tells Aaron, quickly, go take the Ketores. We'll just sum it up. Go take the Ketores. Stand between the Magepa already started. Stand between the live people and the dead people. I don't know what he did with the firing pan over there. The most mystical way to get rid of a magefa, that's exactly what he did. Anyway, this makes no sense now. Now I'm at a complete loss. I don't know why they're being punished, and I have no idea how this. I mean, it's like stupid. I mean, it seems stupid. And Rashi says, I mean, if you really want to put it in the frame of the question, Rashi says that God wanted to show him that the Ketores that you thought is a killer, the Ketores that you were going to bring that that I killed you with, he says, I'll show you that I could heal you with it. So that's something my gaif is going to end with the Ketores. I don't know, what is this, sandbox stories now? Not a kishkish? I mean, this is how the little three-year-olds play. I mean, this is just completely, I mean, at this point, incomprehensible.
I think he says that's to show that it doesn't actually have any powers.
Right. Okay, we'll say yes. You're right.
The point you're obsessing about.
What does that mean?
When the Magepa started immediately, are you saying that in contrast to, like, let's say, when Korach rebelled and this whole elaborate demonstration? Or
no,
you just saying,
I'm just saying, well, it started immediately, meaning that they were Chayv Misa, basically.
Oh, okay.
It was just an automatic thing. Mm-hmm. By the fact that they complained against Moshe, because of whatever reason they complained against them, we don't know why they weren't scared to complain. Mitem Esam Hashem, I mean, you might not say that was the right thing to do, but you say that they were Chayv Misa to do? Not in the quickness of it was just a demonstration of that they were Chayv Misa, not as opposed to that it didn't take time to develop. Okay, so it stops. The Magepa stops. So what happens now? The Magepa is over. It seems that the event's over, and we could say that it's over insofar as that now we had to have a Mashmeres. We had to have a memorial made. So not a memorial. Mishmeres is a not a memorial, a remembrance to teach an idea. So he made the event of the staffs. The event of the staffs. You just go through this real quick. So Moshe told every tribe, take a staff, and we'll throw it in a pile. And we'll see what happens in the morning. And the next morning they woke up, and Aaron's staff was budded. It grew things on it like it was alive. So this was clear that Aaron was the right. He was Zocha for the Kahuna. That was the way that they did that. So that's what happens. So pasuk chafei now. Put this in front of the Eidos as a Mishmeres, as a remembrance, as a sign against those who rebelled. So their complaining against me should stop and they shouldn't die. And that's what happened. That's what he did. Okay. I mean, first of all, the complaint wasn't against God, it was against Moshe. You don't see by Yelam Moshe v'Aaron v'Hashem. The plane wasn't against; it was against Moshe Rabbeinu. And v'lo yamusa means that that type of complaint, whatever kind of complaint it is, really means that they were chayiv misa. And somehow this budded the rod by sitting in the Ohel Moed, in the Kodesh Kedashim, which no one ever gets to see, is going to be a mishmaros.
Are you saying that was the budding of the rod to show that Aaron was the? Was the real
calling? I think that's the plain shot.
Wasn't that cleared up by the whole Korah?
They needed a memorial. It seems that they needed a memorial. It seems that they needed a memorial. Just whatever happened at the Magefa, an ending, was not enough to end the story. It seems that they needed a Mishmaris.
What are the things on Mishmaris?
We'll, maybe at the end, we'll, I mean, it's Mishmaris generally is something that teaches an idea. But it's an idea that has a it's an idea that has a physical representation. Okay, so what do you think should happen now? The story should end. Nope, it doesn't end. We have two more psukim. V'yom b'nei Yisrael Moshe Leimar Hink Avanu Avanu Klanu Avanu Kol Hakarev Hakarev Es Mishkan Hashem Es Mishkan Hashem Yamas. They basically seemed like they're going to say that we're going to die again. You're going to kill us. Didn't the Magefa stop? Didn't they get a Mishmeres to stop the complaints? Were they so afraid that they're going to die now? What are these two psukim? That's what I want to know. What are these two psukim? Okay.
There's no response to it.
All right, we can stop. There is more to the story. Like I said, it's just an unending story. But I think that we have enough to see that we're utterly confused, and we have no idea what's going on. Okay, so there's a Rashi that references a Medrash. I see that based on time, I have to pick it up a little bit. All right, so I'll go through the Medrash quickly. Okay, it's Peichash. It's Mesechus Shabbos, Peichas Amud Beis. So I'll translate. I mean, we'll all right. I'll read the Medrash. All right. So the Medrash goes: Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, B'shash Ala Moshe Lamaram, when Moshe went upstairs to the heavens, Amar Malchei Hasharas Nakadosh Baruch Hu. The Malachim said to God, Ribono Shalom, Mali Yilo Risha Beinenu. What is this son of man doing amongst us? So God said to Malachim, he's here to get the Torah. Armu lefanav chamuda genuza shegnuza lecha teisha meyash v'shivim arba daros karm shivra olam atum vakish litno le levas v'adam. Basically, it's a limud. It says that that which you created 974 generations ago, 974 generations ago, a thousand generations ago, you waited 974. You waited 26 generations to give it to these people. This, which basically means this great treasure, which you were waiting to give to somebody, this is who you decided to give it to. Okay. Very strange. And they quote some psukim. I'm not going to go through the psukim. So they quote some psukim. So Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. So God says to Moshe, Hichsalam Teshuva. Give him an answer. Yeah, I waited a long time. Tell him why I'm giving it to you. So Moshe says back, also, what a strange medrash. I'm going to have one of Moshe. I'm afraid. Shem Yisrafeno behevel shebepiyam. Maybe I'm going to get destroyed by the fiery breath. If I answer them, they're going to destroy me. I mean, the question, I mean, that's just it's just a funny story. If God says go do it, I mean, obviously Malachim would be under control. Okay, so what was God's response? I'm alo echaz bekisei kvodi. Grab onto my chair. Because I'm chulam. Hold on to my throne, and then give him an answer. Okay. So, and they quote a pasuk, and they learn out from the pasuk that Rav Nichum Alamed Shapira Shakai Meziv Shekinasov Ananu Olav. He basically, by holding on to the Kisei HaKavod, the heavenly chair, so God spread out like a protection against him, protection around Moshe, so now if the Malachim breathed on him, he'd be fine. So Moshe answers, so now Moshe feels safe, he says, Rabbanu Shalom, Torah Shat, and no sin the Maksiv, but what does it say in the Torah? Anokhis v'sham lakecha, shes v'sichem yaratz Yisrael. Right? That's the Pasuk. So he says to Malachim, Mitzrayim yidarsam lefaro v'shtabatam. You went, if it went down to Mitzrayim, did Paro yev serve? No. Tamar lama, why do you need the Torah? Shuvma, ksivba, he responded more. What does it say in it? Lo yele lecha Elohim acherim. Don't have other gods. So, Beinam, Matem Shrim, Shodim Avodazara. Do you live, it says you can't have other gods. Do you live amongst nations that you can be tempted? Shuv mok, sivba. Zachas yom ha-shabbos ha-kacho. Keep Shabbos. Kolim atem osim malacha, shatim tzrichim shvos. Do you ever do, keep Shabbos. So he says, malachim, do you ever do any work, do you need a break? Shuv mok, sivba. Lo tisa. Don't swear in God's name in vain. Ma'asim matan yesh b'necham. Do you ever do business amongst each other that you're going to have to take a shua? Shuv maksiv ba, kabres avicha v'asimecha. Im yeshlechem? Av eim yeshlechem? Do you have parents? Shuv maksiv ba, lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignav. Kine yesh b'necham? Yetzahara yesh b'necham? So basically his argument was that it's completely inapplicable to you.
I'm not clear on that question. Wasn't the question then, why did you wait this long to give the Torah, and then why did you give it to this guy?
Why did you give it to the human race?
Oh, the human race, and I thought you were saying Moshe.
Okay. Well, Moshe representing the human race. So, the answer was that basically the Torah is not written for Malachim. I mean, if you stop here now you really, what Malachim did, and Malachim quoting Pesukim before to prove that Moshe shouldn't get the Torah. Now all of a sudden they forgot about that the whole Torah was written in a way that's completely inapplicable to them, and it doesn't even say they wanted it. Mm-hmm. It's clear that it was meant for man. So, I mean, let's be real. A third grader couldn't answer these questions. This was the great answer. This is such a great answer. Wait till the response. They were so blown away by this highly intelligent answer that they said, Miyad hodel ol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Immediately they admitted to God that this is good. Man should get the Torah. And he quotes a pasuk. And then right after they admitted that to God, miyad, immediately, kol echad echad nasilo ohev. They made Moshe like a loved one. This was such an impressive answer, that the Torah is not written for you, that they just loved him. They loved him. So, and not only that, in Masalo Davar, and they gave him things. Shenemar, Allah Slamarm Shvushav, it says that he went up and he received bounty. So, why? Why did the Malachim give him presents? They got presents from Malachim. Why did he get presents from Malachim? Bishar Shekarucha Adam Lekachas Matanas. Because we called you a Yelod Isha. We made fun of you. So, because we called you a name calling, that's what's going on over here, name calling. Now that we love you, we feel bad. So we're going to give you presents. It doesn't say what the presents are except for one. One present that we get from the Medrash. The present is... Even the Malach HaMavis gave him something. Shenemar v'yitin esak tores v'yichapar alam. So our story. He told him the secret of the Ketores. Now, what's interesting is the secret of the Ketores only worked in this case. any other magefa, Moshe could have gone out, Aaron could have gone out, they could have did whatever they did to the Ketores, they could have waved it, sprinkled it, we don't know, and nothing would happen. Only this time, for some reason, the Ketores is going to work. And this is the great secret. And the Gemara, the Medrash ends, I mean, with a funny line. Elav, if all this isn't true, that the Malach HaMavis gave him this little secret here, you know how to stop a magefa? Incense. How do we know? Elav, if this isn't true, Dharma Lay, that they told him, Yav Yonda, how did he know? How do you know this magical potion works? Man can't think this up. So what's the Medrash talking about? What is going on here? Okay, so in trying to understand the Medrash, one of the more confusing things about the Medrash is this Kisei Akava. Moshe was scared that the Malachim's fiery breath was going to consume him, so God's solution was hold on to the Kisei Akavod. That will protect you. When you see that he became very, very confident, once he did that, he was able to completely support his reason why people should get the Torah. So, even before we get to that, just set a context of what's really going on here. Obviously, it's a Maran of Ula, and Moshe Rabbeinu was bothered by a question. And the answer to the question is something that's very, very important. It seems that Moshe Rabbeinu was bothered by something. And God needed to teach him this idea. And that's what's contained in the Medrash. But first, understand the idea. There was a prerequisite, so to speak. You had to grab onto the Kisei. Okay? So, I mean, it sounds reasonable that Moshe had a question. It seems that he didn't know an answer to something. And what's that question? And what's the answer given? But we have to know what Kisei means first. So I'll read you the Mara. The Rambam in the first on homonyms on page 21. Okay. The original meaning of the word... Is this on? Yeah. Okay. The original meaning of the word Kisei requires no comments. Since men of greatness and authority, kings use the throne as a seat, and the throne thus indicates the rank, dignity, and position of the person for whom it's made. The sanctuary has been styled the throne, inasmuch as it just likewise indicates the superiority of him who manifests himself and causes his light and glory to dwell therein. Compare, a glorious throne for on high, from the beginning is the place of the sanctuary. Okay. For the same reason, the heavens are called throne, for to the mind of him who observes them with intelligence, they suggest the omnipotence of the being which has called them into existence, regulates their motions, and governs their sublunary world by their beneficial influence. As we read, thus saith the Lord, the heavens are my throne and the earth my footstool. They testify, this is important, it's all important, but this line, they testify to my existence, my essence, and my omnipotence, as the throne testifies to the greatness of him who is worthy to occupy it. And then he goes on, in the next chapter, I won't read it, to basically say that, of course, the throne can't be a physical being, a physical object, because God, who isn't physical, wouldn't need to sit on anything. So clearly it's not a physical. But what is the throne? That last line. The idea of the Kisei HaKavod, it testifies to my existence, my essence, and my omnipotence. So, I think Moshe's question was as follows. I think Moshe Rabbeinu's question was, man has the ability to perceive truth. Man does have that ability. Man can perceive that God exists, he's the ultimate existence, and he's the real existence. That's true. Man does have that ability. But man is also a physical creature, and he contains a psyche. It can never last. Man's emotions and desires are going to get in the way of this. So at a particular point, he could be clear-headed enough to see truth and accept truth. But at some point, some emotion is going to overtake him, where he's going to become blinded. And not only is an emotion going to overtake and become blinded, he'll actually be able to come up with a logical argument to support his new belief. That's the Ben Yilod, Yilod Isha. That's what it means that when Malachim called Moshe the son of a woman, the son of the product of a woman, it means that you are a physical being. And insofar as you are a physical being, we don't care that right now you could perceive truth. It's not going to last. So the Malachim said to Moshe, to God, this great thing that you have, this Torah, which is this phenomenal thing, it's going to be wasted on these people. It's true it's written for them. They knew all these psukim were here in the Medrash, in the story. But it's not going to last. It's going to fall apart. It can't continue. In a moment they'll see truth. But then their emotions and desires are going to get in the way. And Moshe says, God says, Moshe, answer. And he says, I can't. They're right. That's his question. They're right. So what did God teach Moshe? Two steps. One step is that man has the ability to perceive truth and it to be real to the person, to accept God's essence, his existence, and his omnipotence. That means the ability to see objective truth. He has that ability. But hashgacha is necessary to sustain man. Without hashgacha, the question is unanswerable. The Malachim would be right. They would destroy man. Moshe would be destroyed. Man without Hashgachas Hashem, without divine influence, would not be able to overcome his emotions and his physical being. And here's the what I think is the chiddush of the whole matter. That idea is you know, what I just said is not a big chiddush. It's laid out many times, and we're spalla for it. I mean, every time we finish Monesrei, we say, we basically ask that God should help us be perfected. We're spalla for it. Because it's impossible without God. But what Moshe learned in this story was that the Torah, the system of the Torah, is part of that system of Hashgachas Hashem. It's not just do's and don'ts, not that he thought that. It's not just ideas given to man. It's ideas given to man developed in a certain way that would allow man to continually perceive truth. It's true emotions are going to come along and try to overcome man and change his belief. But one who adheres to the whole system of the Torah will be able to overcome that natural process. And you should know one of the psukim, I did this for the lack of time, one of the psukim, when the malachim were moda, that God, the pasuk actually that they used, say God was moda, so it's a pasuk in Tehillim. So Rashi says on that pasuk in Tehillim, it said that God looked into the world and he said, without the Torah, it's going to fail. It's impossible. Again, this is not a new idea. We see that many times God had to step into the natural development and change things by Noach. So God saw the people living 1,000 years. And he says, if they continue to live this long, they're all going to turn to Rishon. We'll explain that a little bit more in a few minutes. But they're all going to turn to Rishon. So he had to change how long man lives. Man on his own, outside of Yechidim, an individual will be able to sustain it. An individual. But an entire nation to be able to overcome this is an absolute impossibility. Where do we see such a phenomenon? Korach. Korach was the individual, the example of this idea. He was overcome by a desire, kavod. He created an ideology, a support argument to his desire. Halach is whatever you want it to be. And it was very attractive to everybody. Everybody liked this. When Klal Yisrael, Yisrael Asher B'Sivoseihem, when Klal Yisrael saw Korach fall into this trap, they saw in themselves the same thing. They said, we're doomed. This is never going to work. If a man, 6 months after, 8 months after Kabbalah Satara, is able to come up with an argument against Moshe that sounds very reasonable. It's true 8 months ago, Moshe Emes, Soros Emes was clear to us. Everyone in our Sinai saw that as absolute truth. 8 months later, they started to doubt it. Maybe Korach's right. Moshe doesn't have an argument. He has to maybe have an unnatural event take place. Maybe he's right. We are doomed. If we're not doomed today, we're doomed tomorrow. So immediately their response was, they complained against Moshe. They went to Moshe's tent, they complained. They said, that's it. It's over. But you give us this, you showed us the truth and said that it was an ol and a shvua. If we follow this truth, it's going to be wonderful. If we don't, we're going to be destroyed. We're going to be destroyed. It's written already. It's an impossibility.
Does Moshe backed away after God's gone?
Yeah, they recognize their own this is happening. This is a story. It might not be written yet, but it's already taking place. It's impossible. We as a nation are not going to be able to sustain ourselves. It's impossible. Moshe's question. They had Moshe's question. Moshe's question was demonstrated in the events of Korach. So what's the answer? The answer is the system of the Torah.
So there are two steps?
One step was the idea that there's the man can't reach perfection without Hashkachas Hashem. And the second step was that the Torah is part of the system of Hashkacha. It's not just a system of ideas. And ideas man has the ability to see. Individual man has the ability to see truth. We see throughout history man has the ability to perceive great truths. But that an entire nation should be able to sustain itself, that is an absolute impossibility. And it was Moshe's question, and it came to light. It actually took place. The end was on its way. But Moshe Rabbeinu had to teach Klai Yisrael this idea. Where did he teach him this idea? By the Ketores. Now, I need to preface that there's speculation. I can speculate as to why the Ketores was used to teach the idea. Okay? But the Ketores represents the system. The Ketores in this case, why the Ketores is a question. It's a whole machlokes between the Ramban and the Rambam, what the Ketores is anyway. According to the Rambam, it's just Kavod Hashem. Because the Mikdash basically stunk. You had dead animals all over the place, burning, dung. You can imagine what the Mikdash smelled like. It wasn't wonderful. So according to the Rambam, the Ketores was there, so people shouldn't see that shouldn't go into a place that's with a Shechina Shares, and just smell horrible. That's why they had the Ketores. Kvod Hashem, Kvod Shemayim. According to Ramban, it's a different reason. The Ketores has two parts to it. One is this idea to see man has to focus on God's existence, Yichud Hashem. And the second thing is it's that Tzchar V'Onesh. So what I was saying was, and I'm not interested in showing why the Ketores in particular was used to teach this idea, why it demonstrates this concept in the system. We can speculate on that. But that the Ketores was used to teach this idea is clear. Saying that there's a system here. The Ketores in and of itself has no value. Ketores isn't a killer. We'll explain that Rashi. The Ketores isn't a killer. It doesn't kill things. It doesn't support things. It's nothing. All the Ketores is part of the halachic system. Man has the ability to attach himself to halachic system, not only the ideas of the Torah, but the derech hachayim of the Torah. It's not just ideas. Can't get carried away the other way. Man is not just a thinking creature. He's an acting creature, which is very interesting in the Medrash, why it says the Moshe had to grab onto the. It's not just enough to know the idea. Man grabs onto it. It's real to him. He grabbed onto something. It was real to him, and he had to take an action. He had to take a maisa. So man, through the process of the halachic system, that idea was taught through the system of Ketores. But through that, Klai Yisrael has the ability to sustain itself. To clear it up a little more even, there's a question we didn't ask, was the Malach HaMavos. Why the Malach HaMavos? Why the Malach HaMavos? Why singularly? Why was the Malach HaMavos giving Moshe? It doesn't say what the other treasures he got was. It says this one. Why the Malach HaMavos? And is there any significance in the Malach HaMavos to the events of Korach as well? So there's a medrash that says that in early Bereshis, man was as high as the heavens and as wide as the universe. Someone has once asked Rabbi Chait what that means. So he didn't give a share on it. So Solomon told me that he was walking home with him. Someone asked him a question by a lunch that he went to, and he didn't know the answer right away, and he was bothered by it. And then he gave the following answer. He says, "Man as high as the heavens means his ego is unending. Man's ego is unending. But something that's very high, if it doesn't have a wide base, falls right over. It's unsustained." So the width represents man's immortality fantasy. So you see from that medrash, the Malach HaMavis represents man's immortality. So we see from that idea that man's immortality is one of the greatest supporters to his ego, and is one of the greatest supporters to his sins. When the immortality fantasy basically functions in a way that gives existence to man that only God has. It's the tremendous blind spot that man has. When man feels that he's immortal, even in the fantasy, you say, "I know I'm going to die," but you don't know you're going to die. You don't really think you're going to die. You think you're going to live forever. When you have that, and that's in operation, God can't be real. God's existence as the real existence is lacking. Now, I'm saying the idea in the absolute. Obviously, we live in growth modes. So as the immortality fantasy goes down, we have the ability to perceive truths greater, okay, and understand that idea of God's existence being more real than, or being the real existence, and our existence being transitory and contingent and basically an illusion, practically. How does man overcome that? As a nation, an individual can overcome it. He works on himself. I mean, you see great minds throughout history. Maybe, 100, 200. We have writings, 1,000. I don't know. Billions of people live. We have a very, very small amount of people. But as a nation, to sustain itself and have these ideas as being real to a person, that requires a breakdown of man's ego, and a tremendous amount of his ego is supported by his immortality fantasy. It's exactly Korach again. Korach, ego was stepped on, so he came up with an argument. What kind of argument did he come up with? Man can do what he wants. Whatever you think is good for you, that's what you do. I mean, the Rav very clearly talks about Korach's ideology to being the conservative reform movement of today. Whatever you think is right for you, that's what's good. That means that man's desires are as real as God's desires, so to speak. That's a very attractive philosophy. Whatever I want, I can do. I have to do this, but in this situation I don't. I should be doing this, but in this situation, whatever. We all know our own little fantasies. That ideology is very supportive of it. But what's necessary for it is the immortality fantasy. When a person knows that he's mortal and he's going to die, then he knows he has limitations. When he knows he has limitations, there's something greater than him. When he knows there's something greater than him, he could follow it. How is this developed? It's a very nice idea. How is this developed in man? Through Hashgachas Hashem. What is part of the system of Hashgachas Hashem? The system of the Torah. And it's not just ideas, but it's a whole, as we know, it's a whole Derech HaChaim. Okay, so I think that's the idea in the Medrash. And that is the idea that I think plays out in the Pesukim as well.
Is when Moshe has a mashal of Moshe Rabbeinu's own arguments within himself?
Yes. And they represent, the Malachim there, I think, represent, I mean, Malachim many times used in the story, but I think the Malachim there represent that which isn't limited by physicality. That isn't, that which isn't limited by a psyche. That which isn't limited by emotions. He's saying, you have the ability to see truth, we have the ability to see truth, but we're going to sustain it, and you're going to fall apart. But as soon as they saw that Moshe had the ability to sustain it, through Ashkacha, then he was one of them. Miyadu Oev. Mm-hmm. Immediately he was like them. A different species, but just like them in what? And the most important thing, the ability to see that God's the real existence and that he's the real truth.
Why was he turning it back on the Malachim and saying, is this for you, is this for you? Instead of saying, we can...
I think it was a way of demonstrating... Oh, yeah, good. I'm glad you brought that. All those things demonstrate how the Torah is exactly for man, that it perfects man. It takes man's weaknesses and it turns it around to teach the true ideas. So man goes out, for example, man goes out into the greatest one, Lo Yel Mecher. So man goes out into the world and there's a lot of different systems out there. A lot of different man. What is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is a man projects his desires onto reality, simply. And if it's in the form of worship, that's Avodah Zarah. So man goes out into the world and the universe doesn't exactly match up to your own desires. So you quickly create systems to make it work. So the idea of Lo Ye'alech Emecherim really removes that. The idea of Masav Matan, man's going to have desires to steal from his friend. So you're going to be dishonest in business. So you're going to have to give a shul one day. You're going to have to face that dishonesty. You're going to have to overcome it. You know, you can't you have desires. Man has desires. He can't just let your desires run wild. So he showed in the... You're right, it wasn't this brilliant answer insofar as in the frame of the question. But in the frame of the answer, it's a way that the Torah demonstrated, the Medrash demonstrated how the system of the Torah is constructed in a way to work with man's emotions, and work with man's psyche, work with man's weaknesses, and overcome it. Does that answer the question?
Why is he saying that it's not for the Malachim?
It's not because it's not for pure Sefer. It's right. For creatures with...
It's not just ideas. The Torah is not just ideas. It's a way, it's a part of a system of Hashgacha, meaning that man has it's a system that allows man to learn those ideas and those ideas to have reality. The Malachim don't need that aspect. It's not for you. It's for us. Malachim was saying, these are the greatest ideas in the world. Why are you giving it to people that aren't going to be able to do anything with them? They're going to fall apart. So the answer is, it's not just ideas. It's part of my system of Hashgacha that will allow man to continue to perceive these ideas and live by these ideas. And these ideas to have reality. Okay? Okay. So just go through let's see if we can remember the questions now. So one of the questions we asked was, the Korach question. Why were they so sure? Why weren't they afraid? How did they switch so fast? Moshe Emes, Asaras, Emes, and now all of a sudden the Korach will die. Even his Eda, right, with the Machdos, they were willing to bring an HSR. So we see that's exactly it. When man's desires become so powerful, he's able to create an ideology. He's able to create a support argument. It is an important idea. This is very important, I think. Man just isn't overcome by emotions. I mean, you see people doing the craziest things every day. All you have to do is read a newspaper, speak to business people in business. I just had a case where a guy committed the stupidest fraud in the world, like as if he wouldn't get caught. The stupidest thing. People become complete idiots. How did he think? They come up with arguments. This is man's nature. They come up with arguments to support their desires. Those arguments could be just as real to the person when he's under that influence as an idea that's real. 8 months before, Moshe MS, Visaraso MS. A few months later, a year later, we have a new system here. I believe this today. This was real. It was real to them the way this is here, real to us. The way a year ago, Moshe MS, Visaraso MS. Man has that ability. That is a tremendous pitfall that we have. We have a desire, we can come up with an argument to support the desire, that we can live our lives by it. An individual can overcome it. But there's only one remedy for us, and that's the system of the Torah. Hashgachas Hashem. Without Hashgacha, we would, as a people, as a species, essentially fall prey to that. We'd see truth, but then get blinded by it. We'd be blinded from it. The next thing was, as soon as they saw the end of Korach, even before the 250 people died, they became petrified that they're going to also die. Why? Because this is us. There's no difference between Korach and us. He's a little more charismatic than we are. He's a little braver than we are, but he's no different than we are, and we are no different than he is. And then the 250 people were killed immediately after that. Okay, some things had to happen with the Machtos. I think that idea of what was happening by the Machtos, I can't show how, because I don't have it, but my intuition tells me that that's the first place Moshe tried to teach this idea, before the Ketores even. But it didn't take. Vayelanu kol adar, the entire nation of Klal Yisrael complained against Moshe. It's very natural. This is not a crazy people. These are people who say, you doomed us. We are doomed. Thank you very much. Wouldn't that be your reaction? What are you afraid of dying? If you know you're going to die. When they weren't afraid of Moshe's great powers or representing God, so to speak, we're doomed. There's nothing to go running to your tent and hide about. It's horrible. When you have a fear that something's going to happen, that anxiety is greater than the fear. They weren't worrying about dying anymore, that Moshe was going to kill them. They're doomed. So they didn't go running back to the tents and hide. They said, that's it. What did you do to us? What did you do?
Was it against Moshe?
That argument, just hold off on that. That argument, that ideology, that argument that we're doomed, basically is under the belief system that we can't know truth anymore. When Klal Yisrael no longer is operating as if they have the truth and can live by the truth, they are chayav b'zeh. There's no reason for their existence anymore. So natural to that argument was the Magefa right away. The Magefa started immediately. The reason why Moshe, would just seem that God wasn't real to them anymore. Moshe was real to them. So they complained against Moshe.
Mm-hmm. So complaining against God would have been better?
Well, ultimately it was a complaint against God. As we see later in the sukkah, we'll skip a little bit and we'll say that. Why ultimately is playing against God? It means that we don't accept God's existence anymore. It's not a taluna in the sense that they complained against God and why did you do this to us? It's a complaint against God where they can no longer accept that God exists, is the real existence. They can't live like that. They believe it, but they don't believe it. It's not real to them. And we see such a concept by Eliyahu Har Carmel. Eliyahu says to me, how long are you going to straddle the two sides of the fence? On one side of the fence, you believe in Baal. On the other side of the fence, you believe in God, in real God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the creator of the universe. And he says, I'll prove to you that I'm right. And he made a whole miracle, Eliyahu Bar Carmel. And they said, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim. God is God, God is God, God is God. 3 days later, they're back to Baal. It's an unending. All these things don't help. Punishments don't help. So the complaints, ultimately, yes, it was lodged against Moshe because that's the nature of the complaint. But the idea of the complaints is they're dismissing themselves from God and the pursuit of God. So God says, that means, that's really against me. Not a complaint against me. They're against me. They're not going to follow a life that pursues truth. They're going to follow. They've given up. They're going to follow a life that meets their desires and come up with arguments to support it. They're chayav misa. That's exactly what he says. He says, this mishmerish should stand as a sign against those who rebelled and end their complaints. May all live, lo yamusa. They shouldn't die. If the complaints went on, if the complaints continued, means if they would be against me, if they couldn't accept me as the ultimate truth, then they are chayav misa. So there's no reason for Klal Yisrael to exist. Klal Yisrael doesn't exist like any other nation, purely naturally. Klal Yisrael has a metaphysical existence. And if Klal Yisrael isn't functioning properly, they have no reason to exist anymore. And the natural events of the world would be that Klal Yisrael, like any other nation, would cease to exist.
It seemed like they were returned
through Olimud. They were returned. Where do you see that it worked?
I'm saying Klal Yisrael has survived since that point, is all I'm saying.
It's arrived since that point, exactly, because we have the Torah.
Right. I'm saying Like, why did it take a Magdefa in order for that thing to happen? It couldn't be done through any other...
It didn't. Approach. Sometimes a person needs to be in a certain state to hear an argument. Not every idea you can give up. How many times do you, I mean, I know in my life, I hear an idea when I'm 20, I hear when I'm 30, I hear when I'm 40. 20, I can give it over. 30, I can give it over. 40, I can live by it. And then there are many ideas of 40 I can give over, and I can't live by it. I mean, that's the natural development. So they heard the idea. It didn't take for some reason. I'll tell you, you can investigate it. This is not this. I think this year sets up everything. I don't think it's the end of everything. I think there are certain essential ideas that we wanted to bring out. But the last two psukim, I think, now are beautiful. The last two psukim, pasuk chav zayin and chav chas, when Klai Yisrael's response to this whole episode was, they said, you do the mikdash, you do the avoda, we're done. If any of us try to do this, we're going to die. Klai Yisrael accepted the... What's the idea that's being taught there? It wasn't a complaint that we're still doomed to death. It was an acceptance of what they are. They accepted that they have the ability to see truths. They accepted that they have weaknesses and that they have limitations. It's Korach's argument was that everybody's equal. Anybody could be a Kohen Gadol. Right? Means there are no limitations. We're almost like God. He exists, he does what he wants, we exist, we do what we want. Exactly. So the answer is no, we do have limitations. These two psukim represent that. We have limitations. When they accepted that they have limitations, they accepted what they were, they accepted what they are, that personality can engage in the Torah. And that personality, when he engages in the Torah, can meet the objective of the Torah. All right, I think we...
They ended with a question. It doesn't seem like it's just a simple proclamation and an acceptance. They have a question.
Yes. But I think what's the type of question that you ask? Rhetorical. It's rhetorical. It's like, if we were to be involved in this, we would die. But we're not. There's a system here. The Kohanim are dedicated to Avodah. Klai Yisrael could be wonderful on the highest level, higher than the Kohen. He goes into the Mikdash, he tries to do Avodah, he's killed. There's limitations. There's a system here, we understand the system, and the system is God's system, and it's given over to us to teach ideas and to enable us to follow those ideas. It was an acceptance. And that was it. The idea was taught, and Klai Yisrael, we see, has survived. And you see an amazing thing. I mean, just practically, look in the world of Klai Yisrael. This idea has sustained itself, essentially, which is really amazing. You see in the world of the non-Jewish world, so this idea yechidim shebechidim. But that the Jewish people that say there's an objective truth, and I have to live my life in line with that objective truth, that has overcome. Okay, people are weak, and they distort that somewhat. I mean, we all do. But as a philosophy, that there is a truth, that there is a God, that there is a source, and that he has a will of some kind, that Klai Yisrael, for the most part, has been able to overcome the entire history of the rest of man. And that's Hashgachas Hashem. And part of that Hashgachah is the system of the Torah. Okay, any questions?
The Ketoros
was the method that he used to teach that idea.
That idea that he learned
in the Medrash, that idea was used through the system. He taught that idea through the system of the Ketoros.
How did
Klai Yisrael witnessing this? What happened? That's the thing. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron didn't just stand out there sprinkling.
Right.
It would have to be that he taught him the ideas.
I'm just saying, in terms of what Rashi says, that it doesn't kill and it doesn't heal people.
Oh, that's beautiful. That it's nothing in of itself.
Right.
It's all God's system. Ketoros isn't a killer and it's not a saver. It's all God's system. It's all part of Hashgachas Hashem. Again, I preface it. There's a lot you could say about the Ketoros. I'm not looking so much to answer why he used the Ketores per se to teach these ideas. There's room for speculation. You could speculate certain things based upon the Chokas and the Rambam and the Ramban. But again, I wanted to get the essential idea out. And you can come back next year and look at the Medrash and find new ideas, and you come back at Korach and find new ideas. This is, Rabbi Chait once said, that Korach is part of the Matan Torah. It's part of Har Sinai. It's not a separate event. It's part of Har Sinai. And I think based upon this idea, you can see it. You can see why. The idea of Moshe Emes or Sarasso Emes has to have been in a full context. It's not just ideas. It's not just ideas. It's ideas given over to man, and man's inability to just live by those ideas on his own. It has to be put into practice in a very particular way, and that's what the system is. Otherwise, there's no Har Sinai. Otherwise, a year later, you have Korach, his Eidah, and Klai Yisrael. I know I believed it, but now maybe. Okay. Matt has a good idea about the Ketores.
Right, no, I mean, the idea of the Ketores is to show that man cannot perceive reality as it actually is, which is exactly what the distortion was there, because the person thinks that he's not a creature that has an intellect that's affected by the psyche, so he could just involve himself directly in the ideas.
It's very good.